The spillover is powered by Turning Point USA. You know what else is powered by Teep USA? America Fest, the biggest party in America, is coming to Phoenix, Arizona from December 18th to the 21st. So mark your calendars, baby. We've got some of the biggest names in the conservative movement like Donald Trump Jr., Candace Owens, Tucker Carlson, and musical guests too. They don't call this the conservative Coachella for nothing, okay? We've got Russell Dickerson, Brantley Gilbert, and Ray Lynn, plus way more. That's just what I can fit in this ad right now. It's casual. It's fine. We're fine. So what are you doing? You're going to tpusa.com/AmericaFest to get your tickets. That's what. Use code Alex at checkout for 25% off. I am so excited to see you there. In May 2011, I was a month away from graduating high school. I remember sitting in my honors English class when we heard the news. Osama bin Laden was dead. Cheers erupted. Some of us high-fived and hugged. For all of us who had been in elementary school and could remember the complete U-turn America took that day that the towers fell, it was a collective sigh of relief. Even as a teenager, I was conservative, but I vividly remember thinking that this successful mission was a huge win for the Obama administration. And I was happy. I was happy for America, and I was happy that justice had finally been served for so many grieving families who had lost loved ones on that Tuesday 20 years ago. Growing up as a self-described chubby white kid with strawberry blonde hair in Montana who couldn't swim, no one thought that Robert O'Neill would become not only one of the most highly decorated combat veterans of our time, but also a member of the elite SEAL Team 6. Robert O'Neill was one of the SEALs who helped rescue Captain Richard Phillips from pirates off the coast of Somalia in 2009 that inspired the 2013 movie Captain Phillips. And another one of his most stunning and perhaps most recognizable accomplishments is being the man responsible for firing the bullet that killed the number one terrorist in the world, Osama bin Laden. He is a living, breathing American hero, and I am so honored to have him joining me today. This is Robert J. O'Neill's story on The Spillover. Robert, let's just start with why you decided to become a SEAL in the first place, because I heard it's kind of a juicy story.
Yeah, I thought it was juicy and unique at first because, long story short, I joined the Navy because I got dumped by a girl, by my my high school sweetheart. She was a little younger than I was. I was in my first year of college, and I was actually playing college basketball in the same hometown, and I got dumped, and it was just one of those things that was the straw that broke the camel's back as far as I just got to get out of here. And I thought it was unique to me that, like, just got to leave town. I find out later everywhere I went around the country, everybody gets to an age where I just got to get out of here. But the quickest way out of Butte, Montana, where I'm from, is to leave and join the Marine Corps. And I went to join the Marine Corps because I could leave that day, go to Parris Island, South Carolina, become a Marine. Because I'd seen the movies, I thought Marines looked cool. I'd seen their uniforms. Who doesn't think Marines, you know, aren't awesome? I went down there. I learned very early on that sometimes it's better to be lucky than it is to be good. Because as luck would have it, the Marine recruiter was literally out to lunch, and the Navy guy was in there, and they had offices close to each other. And I had actually heard from two guys with whom I grew up that were 2 years older than me that always wanted to be Marines. A joke they had is that a lot of people don't know this. The Marine Corps is actually part of the Department of the Navy. It's just a men's department. And they were joking. And just because they said that, I figured, well, if anyone's going to know where the Marine is, the Navy guy will. So I walked in there and I said, hey, where's the Marine? He said, well, why do you want to be a Marine? I said, I want to be a sniper. I grew up here in Montana hunting. Marines have the best snipers in the world. He said, look no further. We have snipers in the Navy. You just need to become a Navy SEAL first. Now, I was never going to be in the military. I didn't know what a Navy SEAL was. I barely knew what a Marine was, and I didn't know how to swim. And he kind of brushed over the SEAL thing, but I remember looking at him and thinking, you know, I'm 19, I'm pretty naive, but this guy's a professional recruiter. Why in the world would he lie to me? So I went in there because of that bad relationship, being lucky, which eventually became part of my life, just being lucky. I figured I'll just join the Marine Corps, or the Navy now. And because they have snipers, I signed the paperwork, and it turns out he was lying to me. He had a quota to fill, but I'm in. I signed a contract. Now I guess I'm going Navy. And that was kind of it. And that was the first instance in my life where when if you have a plan and you make a plan, God laughs at you because life happens around you.
Yep, you're, I can relate to that.
Yep, and most people can't. And I joined the Navy. I did find out what they do. I didn't think I was going to make it. But when I got to boot camp, which is basic training, the first place you go, Great Lakes, Illinois, I actually realized I was in a mixed division. So we had half of it were men, half of it were women. As I got to know these people, it seems like 95% of our all-volunteer military were there because of a bad relationship.
Wow.
And the more places I've gone, and I'm talking Chicago, Illinois, Fredericksburg, Virginia, San Diego, everyone's had that moment in life where I just got to get out of here. And that's kind of when life starts. That's why some people take that year off of school. That's why some people join the military. But even some of the women that I met there were like, yeah, I got dumped by this guy. I had to join the Navy.
So explain what a Navy SEAL is for people that do not have family in the military and aren't familiar.
So every branch has their special forces. Like obviously the Army has Green Berets, they have Rangers. Marine Corps has Force Reconnaissance. Air Force has Pararescue. Navy has SEALs. And SEAL is an acronym like the animal, S-E-A-L, but it stands for sea, air, and land. We specialize in the water because we're Navy, but we also skydive for air and then land. We can work on land anywhere. We kind of specialize in that. So because we can do everything, it's the hardest military training in the world. It's about 8 months long from start to finish. You get there a few weeks early for prep. This is after boot camp, 8 months long. And the attrition rate is about 85% of the people don't make it through.
Why aren't they making it through? What is it about it that makes it so hard?
Well, an average day is not including waking up and brushing your teeth and all this stuff. You are at the workout at 5 a.m., workout till about 6:30. You have to run a mile to breakfast, a mile back. And then you work out all day, anything from 2 mile ocean swims to pool swims to different drills where they tie your hands behind your back and your feet together, throw you in a pool for an hour and teaching you to exhale so you can sink, floating, tied up, swimming hundreds of meters, running around with boats on our heads for miles at a time. Obstacle courses where if you fall off, you're going to break your neck. These big obstacles, like everything from high walls to high ropes to slide. They call it slide for life. Weird. And if you're always getting beat, you're always running wind sprints, and that's lunch.
Is that hell week, what you're describing?
We're not even at lunch yet on day one. then you run a mile to the galley, the chow hall, to eat, and then a mile back. So it's a mile to the chow hall. So you got to figure you're running 6 miles a day just to eat.
Yeah, no way. That doesn't sound fun to me, but that was fun for you?
It's horrible. And they're very creative with the stuff that they do. They do CrossFit workouts, but it's not fun. You're wet and sandy and cold the whole time. And that's Monday. And then Tuesday's the next day, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. But then Hell Week is, for us, I think it was week 7. And that's when you wake up on Sunday and you don't sleep at all until Friday. And the whole time, now this whole week, there's 6 guys per boat crew. And that's a team. They're teaching you how to be a team. And you're carrying these big, heavy boats on your heads to the point where by Wednesday, you're getting you got a bald spot from it's rubbing constantly. And you obviously
mean a boat like you're underwater underneath a boat?
No. You're carrying boats over land.
Okay.
That's not normal, but that works your knees, your lower back. And you get stress fractures, you break toes. And it's just all the constant. But the thing, and there's very hard training. This is just the first few weeks. At the end of Hell Week, about most of the guys don't make it through Hell Week, and that's when you can sort of tell those guys might make it, but you still have another 20 weeks to go. The thing about it is it's a mind game because you learn very early on that you can do anything if you keep your mind in it. Because if your mind goes, your body follows. You're not going to pull yourself through by strength. It's what's in your head. And so this course is very hard. It's in a lot of different movies. It's kind of famous. SEALs have become pretty famous. But the mentality, mindset is everything. When I first got there, once I got tricked by the recruiter, I didn't know how to swim.
Yeah, this is what I don't understand. You kind of ended up there by chance. And so you're going through like the worst. I mean, these are extreme circumstances. How is your mindset? How are you able to get through that? Because you were just like, I'm here because of a breakup.
Well, you got to figure, yeah. And again, from Montana, we don't swim up there. And I've never seen the ocean. And I'm with guys that played water polo in college. Like these guys were swimmers. But I had an instructor, I think it was the first day. He said, I know you've probably seen the movies or read the books. Regardless of what you've been told, this course is not impossible. People graduate. look at me, I'm living proof. So I will never ask you to do anything impossible, but I will make you do something very hard, followed by something very hard, followed immediately by something even harder, day after day after day for 8 straight months. And that sounds like a lot to get from now to 8 months from now, but don't think about it that way. That is not how you achieve a long-term goal. I want you to do it like this. Wake up in the morning on time, make your bed the right way, and then brush your teeth. You just started the day with 3 victories. Make it to the 5 a.m. workout on time. And as I'm beating you, don't think about the pain. Concentrate on your next goal in life, which is making it to breakfast. After breakfast, make it to lunch. After lunch, make it to dinner. After dinner, do everything you need to do to get back inside that perfectly made bed. And because you took the time in the morning to make your bed the right way, regardless of how bad today was, and it will be bad, tomorrow is a clean slate. Tomorrow is a fresh start. And when you feel like quitting, which you will, do not quit right now. That's your emotion. Quit tomorrow. If you can keep quitting tomorrow, you can do anything in life.
And what year was this, you becoming a Navy SEAL?
Well, I started training in March of 1996. I graduated in December of 1996. And then I went to SEAL Team 2, and I had to do another year of training. So I became a Navy SEAL right around January of 1998. And then I went overseas the first time with a platoon at SEAL Team 2. Before 9/11, obviously. So we weren't at war. We were just trying to find work.
I remember 9/11 vividly. I was just a kid. I was in third grade at the time. So where were you that day, and how did the tragic attacks actually impact the decisions that you made going forward in your career?
Well, again, when I said life happens around you as you're planning, my plan was to get out of town because I got dumped, not become a Navy SEAL because I won't, but I'll get on a ship and have sea stories and come back to Butte, Montana. But then I made it because that's the way God wanted it. I went to SEAL Team 2. I was like, well, I'll just stay for 4 years, go home. 4 years goes by like that. And when it was time for me to leave, I met all these guys that are Navy SEALs. They're such great dudes. I'm like, well, I'm young. I can't leave them. I'll re-enlist for 4 more years. I'll still be young. Re-enlisted, then 9/11. And now I'm like, I can't leave now. They taught me how to fight. So, and then I heard about SEAL Team 6, but I'll get into that in a minute. I was overseas. I was in Germany on September 11, 2001, and we had just finished a rotation to Kosovo. And if you're not familiar with Kosovo, there was a civil war there in Serbia, Yugoslavia, big civil war, ethnic cleansing, horrible stuff. The United States went in there to just try to split them up. So my job there, I had become a sniper. The recruiter didn't lie to me. I became a sniper after I became a SEAL. And our job wasn't to shoot people. It was just to observe. We're good at observing and measuring distances, making sure no one's hurting each other. And we thought that was as close to combat as we'd ever be. So Kosovo, which is, you know, Southern Europe. Then we went back to Germany just to like clean our stuff and get ready to go back home to Virginia. And then I was sending out emails to people in the operations center, which is like one of those rooms that you see on TV where there's screens everywhere and smart people talking. And I'm just sending email, which, believe it or not, was fairly new. And I was watching TV, and they said, yeah, a small plane just hit the North Tower of the World Trade Center. And we looked up, and there's some SEALs in there. We're looking at it, and we're like, that's a huge building. That's a really big hole. I don't think that was – how, that's not a Cessna. What is that? And then the second plane hit, and one of the guys immediately said Osama bin Laden. This is Al-Qaeda. Everyone's world just changed, and that's how it happened. So now, as opposed to thinking, do we go back to Virginia, or are they sending us to Sudan today? Are we going to Afghanistan? Is this the Iranians? And so we just knew everything changed. Again, I was supposed to get out, but now I got to stay.
And so then how did you find out that you were going to be now on this mission to find this guy, number one terrorist in the world?
It was never, well, it was, he was such a big target that it was always, well, I mentioned, the Army Green Berets and Army Rangers. There's 2 tier 1 units. That's the top units that we have in the military. One is Delta Force. They're pretty famous, but they're, you know, you don't hear much about them because, you know, unlike us, they don't tell stories. They just do their job. And then there's SEAL Team 6, which is another tier 1 unit. It was never going to be us because, you know, we are sea, air, and land, but we're primarily there for hostage rescue at sea. Delta Force does stuff on land, and they're the ones that actually got Saddam Hussein. But I knew my chances would be better if I went to our tier 1 unit, which is SEAL Team 6. And that's a funny story, too. Delta Force sounds cool. No one knows why it's called SEAL Team 6. I'll tell you a little story. When we started the SEAL team, not we, but in 1980, when the SEAL teams were started, SEAL Team 2 and SEAL Team 1 were the first ones. 2 on the East Coast, 1 on the West Coast. And they kept it that way. Odd numbers west, even numbers east. But so there was one and two at first. And then they Richard Marcinko started SEAL Team 6 because he knew eventually the Russians would say there's SEAL Team 1, 2, and 6. Where the hell are 3, 4, and 5?
Is that true?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, now we have 1, 3, 5, 7, 2, 4, 8, 10, and then 6. And there's a couple different ones out there too. But that's why – and we just kept SEAL Team 6 because it sounded cool. So I just knew if I went there, and that was an entirely different, that was a longer, more difficult selection process to get to SEAL Team 6, 9 months long, but it's all Navy SEALs now. And it's all mind games and stress and, a lot of tactics, and it's not to get too much into it, but it's skydiving and close quarters battle, like SWAT team style stuff, but they purposely trick you into thinking you screwed up, even though you didn't, to see how you handle it. And it's like, are you the well, what they're trying to convince you is like, it's a training environment. So it's all self-induced stress, what you bring to yourself. But we're trying to find the person who can realize, and this is good advice, in life, all stress is self-induced stress. That stress is a choice. You know, stress is a bag of bricks that you can pick up in the morning if you want to and start your day off with a negative attitude, just like checking Twitter as soon as you wake up, or at any time. You could put stress down and forget about it, and you should, because it's not helping and it's in your mind. You know, it's like guilt. You know, that play is over. You're not getting it back. There's no point in being guilt. Learn from your mistake and get over it. Whatever it is in life, get over it. Learn from it and get over it. I talk to NFL teams all the time, and I'll tell them, it doesn't matter why it's second and 15. It just is. Now what do? Get over it. And then once the play is over, the game's over, now we can learn from it. Learn from your mistakes. Move on. And, you know, try not to do it again. So that, you know, that the analogy that I've come up with to put stress in perspective is whether you're taking effective fire, like a gunfight on a mountain in Afghanistan, or you're the woman landing a jet on an aircraft carrier at night, or you're the person making a latte at a coffee shop at 7 a.m. on a Monday, and there's a line of angry customers around the corner. What those three have in common is they only feel the amount of stress they allow themselves to feel. And that no one has ever accomplished anything positive by panicking. So that's kind of like we tell each other that panic is contagious.
So I'm guessing when you were told, hey, Robert, here's a fun thing. We thought maybe you could be on the team to go find Osama bin Laden. Were you just like stress free, no panic? All right, let's do it. Well, sure.
That's true. Well, they picked. So I was at SEAL Team 6 for a number of years, and we'd gone on deployment. We've gone to war a bunch. I had over 400 combat missions before that mission. And like two of the missions I was on was the rescue of the lone survivor, Marcus Luttrell, famous story. And then I was the lead jumper to rescue Captain Richard Phillips from Somali pirates. So we were guys that did a lot of stuff. But it was one of the things where being afraid is fine. Like we learned, like people ask me all this nonsense you see on Instagram. What's it like to have no fear? I'm like, I don't know, because I was afraid every time. But that's okay, because fear is fine. It makes you think more clearly. Just don't panic because it's contagious. But you also learn that something else that's contagious is calm. It doesn't matter what you're feeling. If you portray calm, your people will be calm. So that's kind of, so we did all those missions, and then one day they picked us, and it was kind of like, all right, you know, the way they told us was they just said that we found a thing, and this thing is in a house in a bowl, and this bowl is in a country, and you're gonna go get this thing and bring it to us. That's what they told.
What do you mean by thing?
They wouldn't tell us at first. They said a thing. So we're like, okay, are we going to go get Gaddafi, who was a guy in Libya?
Oh, so the thing was an actual, a literal object. It was Osama bin Laden was the thing.
Yeah. So we had to piece it together slowly, because we had about a week before they actually told us. And then and what's cool is when they told us, we actually found out it was a woman that found it. There's one woman. If you or your listeners haven't seen the movie Zero Dark Thirty, highly recommend it. Jessica Chastain plays Maya, who is she's a real person, and not just toughest woman. She's probably the toughest person I've ever met. And she found him. She gave up her life to find him. She didn't have a husband. She didn't have kids, because she worked 20 hours a day, 7 days a week for years to find him. And she was right. And she was to the point where before we left, I was 100% convinced he was on the third floor of that building because she said so. And it was awesome. So when we went in, I mean, we expected to die because we're flying into Pakistan. We have these new helicopters that we don't know if they work. And, you know, this is not a third world country. They have air defense made by Russia. They can shoot us down. When we get there, there's going to be a gunfight. If anyone's going to blow himself up in the entire building, it's him. We're going to run out of fuel because we don't have a way to get more gas. Like, we're going to end up in a Pakistani prison for our short lives. So we're not coming home from this one. So there wasn't fear. There was acceptance. But we're going because this is what we're here for.
Okay, so let's go to that day, the day that you're like, okay, now I have to complete this mission step by step. Explain exactly what happened that day and night leading up to you killing the number one terrorist in the world.
Well, we're able to pick our missions when we want. And if you don't want to go on a mission, you don't have to. We fight on our terms. There are people out there, men and women, who have much more dangerous jobs than we did. So I did have a guy say to me, this is before we left, he said, okay, this is important to realize the mindset. These are real people that barely get paid, can barely afford their mortgage, and they're giving their lives for this stuff. And this guy said to me, don't take this the wrong way, because I'm going. 100% going. I just need to say this out loud to hear it. If we know we're going to die, why are we going? And that's fair. So we talked about it, and what we actually came up with, and one of these quotes is at the Memorial Museum in New York. We said, we're not going after bin Laden for the fame, and we're not going after bin Laden for the reward. We are going after Osama bin Laden for the single mom who dropped her kids off at elementary school on a Tuesday. And then 45 minutes later, she jumped to her death out of a skyscraper, because that was a better alternative than whatever in the hell's going on inside at 2,500 degrees Fahrenheit. She looked down and she made the choice and probably grabbed a stranger's hand. And her last gesture of human decency was holding her skirt as she killed herself. She was never supposed to be in the fight. We're supposed to be in the fight. And that is why we're going. So we had those conversations. And that's when it's like, we're doing this. So then, you know, we said not our goodbyes, but to each other, because we've been on a lot of war. But as opposed to handshakes, we're hugging each other. It's like, all right, see you there. Have a good fight. I actually ran into Maya right before we left. And I said, hey, why are you nervous? And she goes, are you kidding me? Why aren't you nervous? And I said, well, I do this every night. I fly somewhere. We mess with people. We get the bad guys. We come home. And then I thought, well, you need to be right. So I get why you're nervous. Hopefully I see you in a few hours. And so we launched and, you know, we got on our helicopters and then we flew out of a place called Jalalabad, Afghanistan, which is, we had a secret base there right next to the border. And that's where a lot of these CIA people were monitoring. So we took off from there and then we went into Pakistan and we had a 90-minute flight to get to his house. And again, we could get shot down at any time. But if you're worrying about something, and this is good advice for life, if you're worrying about something that your worry is not going to affect, stop worrying. You're wasting your energy. So we weren't worrying about a missile hitting us because that's not going to stop a missile. So block it out. I was looking around at my buddies. I had a guy who put his headphones in, fell asleep.
What was he listening to? Do you know?
One guy said he was listening to Quiet Riot or something like that, like old school heavy metal band. The last song I listened to was Red Nation by The Game.
Oh my gosh, that is so sick. I love that.
And it turned out, because we were Red Squadron, Red Nation, and he even said, I killed Satan. Like, that's just so cool. But I was listening to that. And so this guy fell asleep. And I got the dog Cairo, Belgian Malinois Cairo, next to me. And my buddy's asleep. And I'm like, you were asleep, literally on the ride to bin Laden's house. Man, you have ice in your veins. And so, but what I was doing is what I had learned as a sniper, especially in Kosovo, when I said we were just watching things for hours at a time, I learned to calm your mind, you count. So what I was doing, I'm sitting there and I got a little teeny tripod hunting chair in this helicopter and I'm counting 0 to 1,000 and then 1,000 to 0, 0 to 1,000. I'm just keeping my mind off the missiles, steady breath, whatever. If we get hit, we'll never know it. And then we got 80 minutes in, we banked to the south, 10 minutes out. And this sounds Hollywood. I don't know how I remembered it, but I'm counting and I'm like 556, 557. Freedom itself was attacked this morning by a faceless coward and freedom will be defended. And I don't know how I remembered it, but I have a tattoo. I tattooed that on my arm. That's what President Bush said on 9/11 to address the world. Freedom itself was attacked this morning by a faceless coward and freedom will be defended. And that's when it hit me for real. I'm like, wow, I'm on this mission. We're going to kill this guy. So I'm now getting amped up. We do one more turn to the south. The door opened and I'm looking out. So the door of the helicopter is open. It's on the side. I'm looking out and now it's like there's electricity. I know there's a golf course right there. Abbottabad, Pakistan's a resort town, right?
Yeah, I'm shocked by this. Okay, you're telling me there's golf courses and I pictured this like a little stone house in the middle of the desert.
That's what Western Iraq and Afghanistan look like. This is Pakistan. Pakistan's a first world country. That Pakistan's the center of the universe over there.
So is this a nice house?
Yeah, it was 3-story house. It was a collection of houses. It was a guest house, the big house. There's a car, a garage, other place. There's a garden, a satellite dish. But I remember looking out there and I was like, this is my last like laugh. I'm like, this is some serious Navy SEAL shit we're about to do. Like, this is why we're here. And we had the perfect plan that we rehearsed. And the plan was, I was in the second one. The first one is going to go in, they hover, they kick ropes out. Keep it simple. Ropes go out, grab the rope, slide down like a fireman's pole. That's what we're going to do. That first one in front of his house, we're going to put a couple guys outside, like snipers and Cairo, the dog, in case he needs to catch someone. And then they're going to put my team up on the roof. We're going to fast rope, jump down to his balcony, however we can get there, and then we're going to hit him this way. Navy SEALing, right? That didn't even come close to happen. We actually, before we left, because we trained on this for a couple of weeks, one of the bosses before we left said, what's the worst thing that could happen? And the youngest guy in the room said, the helicopter could crash in the front yard. And we're like, why would you jinx us? Like, but that's what happened.
You crashed?
The first helicopter, he didn't quite crash, but the pilot realized, pilots are amazing. They know so much more stuff than I know anyway. There was a weird updraft. It was 3 degrees warmer, so they're not cutting the wind. And he realized if he powered up, he'd flip it, kill everybody on his helicopter. So he turned it, and this is all in the blink of an eye. He turned it and realized if he put the tail of the helicopter down and hit the nose into the dirt, it might not flip. So he did that.
This whole time I thought you guys jumped from the sky so you could like be real sneaky and sneak up to the house.
We didn't have a choice. We had to fly right into his front yard.
But then they had to have heard you. It's a helicopter.
They heard two of them, yeah. They heard us. They heard the first one crash, and then they were going to put us outside. So there's a big wall, and they put us out here, and my team was going to go up. But this pilot saw him, so he's like, I can't hover. So he just put us down. And we just realized from training together so much, he's telling us to get out. We'll just get out. I remember putting my first foot out of the helicopter, looking at bin Laden's house. I'm like, well, I guess we start the war from here. You know, again, doesn't matter why we're here. We just start. Let's do it. So we knew there was a door off to this side that we could put a big bomb. We can get in anywhere. And I knew a guy who had a big bomb. He put it on this door. It blew it. It didn't open because there was a brick wall behind it. And he turned around and it's called a breach. And what he said, because of training, he goes, failed breach, failed. This is bad. And I said, no, this is good. That's a fake door. He's in there. No one does this. So then I said, okay, I know another door that opens for sure because that's the carport with the garage.
Okay, so pause. How do you know all this? Did you have to study maps of his house?
The woman that found him showed us these images and we just studied it. So we didn't know the interior of the house, but we knew the exterior. Here's where the doors are. Here's where this is. Here's where we think this is. Here's where he walks. So I can close my eyes and see it anytime I want. So we just knew this one opened. We were just closer to that one. Doesn't open. We didn't know that from the air. Now we'll blow this one. Now, again, I didn't know. The helicopters, we called them, it's simple, -1, -2, 1 and 2. I didn't know they crashed. And I heard, when I was doing all other stuff, I heard them saying, -1 going around. Because I assume he took fire and they're going to do a big racetrack and come reattack. But what they were saying was -1 going down. So I didn't hear it right. I didn't know they're in there. And I said, hey, this is so-and-so. I'm going to blast the carport. And I heard someone say, don't blast it. We'll open it. And before I could process that, the doors opened and a thumb came out with a glove that I recognized. And I still didn't know they crashed. But again, I'm like, it doesn't matter why they're there or how they got there. They're just there. This is just reality. Now let's go. So I heard gunfire. There was a couple explosions. My guys are already in bin Laden's house. So I'm like, I guess I'm going in that house. We went in there. And these are the stories that happen, because sometimes the craziest, most stressful situations brings out the darkest yet funniest humor. So we're in here and I'm watching dudes do their stuff. I'm kind of far back looking down a hallway. Other guys, at first I'm seeing guys that already shot some people, but I'm watching Americans grab kids that got separated from their parents and pick them up and run them across a danger area to give them to an older family member because they don't want the kids to be afraid. And that's a prime example of what the good guys do. That's what we do. Al-Qaeda wouldn't do that for us. We are the good guys. So I'm back in a room watching, just proud of my guys, how smart, how good. Like we could blow up, but they're not worried about that. They're just doing the way, you know, slow is smooth, smooth is fast. If you want to be fast, slow down, you know. So anyway, I'm in this room and this guy said, he goes, helicopter crashed. And he was on the helicopter. And so I go, what helicopter crashed? And he goes, bro, our helicopter crashed in the front yard. Like, I think you walked right past it. And it started registering. I'm trying, like, well, I was looking that way. As we're saying this, the sniper and the dog Cairo were running the huge wall outside. Their plan was to run around it twice so that in case anyone ran out, they could grab them. He didn't know they crashed. So he gets to the point where the tail is over the fence. So he's on this side, house is here. The tail of the helicopter is right here. And he just came over and said, guys inside, be on alert. They're ready for us. They have a training mock-up of our super secret helicopter in the front yard. And the boss came over, like something to train. The boss came over and goes, no, jackass, that's ours because we crashed. And the sniper said, yeah, that makes a lot more sense than I was just saying. And it's like, what are we talking about? So anyway, so we're in there, and then the guys are working. They had a couple barricaded doors. We know how to get through this. Because at this point now, we've done this so many times, this is easy. Now, the woman that found Bin Laden said, I don't know where it is, but when you get inside, there will be a stairwell. And it goes to the second floor. And on that second floor, you will find Khalid Bin Laden. That's Osama Bin Laden's 21-year-old son. He'll be there. He'll be armed. And here's how cool she was. She said, if you can ace him, you get a shot at the big guy. That's cool. So sure enough, he was there. And it was at this point, we had quieted down. It's still dark. We don't talk when we're inside. We're very quiet. And the guy, I'm like eight guys back. The guy up front, he whispered something to him to confuse him. He came out with a gun. The guy shot him. So he's dead. Then we go up to the second floor. There's one more floor to go. And the guys in front of me split off to the left and right, because the way our tactics work is you clear an entire floor before you move up. You want nothing behind you that's unknown. So they cleared off, and it's down to two of us. There's one guy pointing up, and there's me looking back. And the way it works is I'll hold his shoulder, and he points up. And when we have enough guys, he doesn't need to turn around and look. I just squeeze him. He knows we're going. But I don't have any guys. Now, we're out of guys. And he's looking up. At the top of the stairs, there's a curtain instead of a door. It looks like a shower curtain, but it's dark green. And he just started saying, hey, we got to go, man. We got to go. Because he's seeing people moving behind it, and he assumes those are the suicide bombers. And what he's telling me in so many words is, but we can beat them, but we got to go now. We got to go. And I'm looking. And finally, and this is my version of the story. So we're serious. And he finally said, hey, man, these b****s is getting truculent. Right? So I have my hand on his shoulder. And here's, again, no, this is going to be my last laugh in life, because this is it. And I whispered in his ear, I said, I don't think that word means what you think it means. And then it wasn't bravery. It was like, okay, I'm just tired of thinking about blowing up. So I squeezed him. He went up. I'm right behind him. He moved that curtain, and he tackled the people that he thought were suicide bombers, which is still the bravest thing I've ever seen, because he's trying to absorb whatever might blow up for the guy behind him. He didn't know it was me. He just knew it was one of his guys. So he did that, and because he went this way, I went that way, and standing there 3 feet away is Osama bin Laden in a doorway of his bedroom, and he has his hands on his wife Amal's shoulders. And I don't know if he's pushing her toward me, but there's like 3 feet, and she's short, he's tall. And I looked at him, and my thought process was, he's taller than I thought, he's skinnier than I thought, that's his beard, it's white, weird, he's not surrendering, that's his nose, that's him, he's a threat. So I had to engage. So I shot him twice in the head, and I shot him one more time, and now he's dead. And then I'm moving his wife out of the way, because again, she's not a threat, I don't want her to be in danger, there's going to be more guys with guns coming up. And then I'm moving her to the back of the room where the bed is so I can sit her down. And this is the part that's weird, that there's a human element involved with this, it's not Hollywood at all. Anytime you take a human life, it's you think, especially later, like now. But his 2-year-old son is standing there, and I'm a father, I look at this kid, and I thought, this kid has nothing to do with this. So I picked him up, I put him next to his mom, and I turn around, and other Navy SEALs are now coming in, and we have to do some tactics called sensitive site exploitation. Now we got to find stuff. But this is when it sinks in, and I'm thinking, oh, is this the worst thing I've ever done or the best thing I've ever done? And I'm sort of standing there, and a buddy comes up to me, Navy SEAL, so obviously very good looking. And
we love to hear that.
So he puts his hand on my shoulder, and he goes, are you okay? And I said, I don't think so. What are we supposed to do now? And he smiled, and he said, now we find the computers. Like, we do this every night. You've done this hundreds of times. And I said, yeah, you're right. I'm back. Holy shit. And he goes, yeah, you just killed Osama bin Laden. Your life just changed. Now get to work.
Woo! have to cheer. I have to cheer. So when he says you've done this every night, it's because you guys were practicing like simulations.
No, we've done this where we go into people's houses, we shoot the bad guys, we save the kids, we grab the computers and we leave. And we've done it in Iraq, Western Iraq, Afghanistan, other parts of the world, Yemen. We do this. And that's why they pick the most experienced guys, because this is normal. But now it's like, I was in a daze and he goes, come on, you're good. We do this all the time. I'm like, yeah, we found the computers, of course. And so then we went through, we found everything. And then we had to blow up the first helicopter because we're not leaving it there for China or whatever. So that means we have to call another helicopter in. So our helicopter grabbed the first group of guys, took them out with the body. Another helicopter came to get us, full of Navy SEALs, which I think is cool that SEAL Team 6 was rescued by SEAL Team 6. Like other guys came in to get us and then we flew out. And so that's a part of the mission where we're supposed to be dead, but now we might live.
Now, I'm going to ask you something that's probably going to piss you off, but I just have to ask it because people are idiots. How do you know it was you that landed the kill shot?
Well, I mean, because he was standing there. He hadn't been hit. And it's one of those things now that it's hard to be the only person in the world to see something and convince people. I mean, imagine being like Neil Armstrong. Well, you didn't land on the moon. Well, whatever. I mean, I don't really care because as far as I'm concerned, the team got him, and not just the team, like Maya found him. The woman found him. She just told us where to. I was smart enough to carry a sledgehammer and a gun, and I turned a corner because of someone that was brave, and I just shot him because, you know, that's it. So, I mean, we got, and again, once you get into we got him, someone will, you'll get these questions like, well, how do you know it was him? Maybe it's fake. Maybe blah, blah, blah. Because a lot of people on the right hate that Obama ordered it.
So I know. And that's the thing is I've been a conservative my whole life. And even as I'm sitting there in class as a senior in high school and find out that we killed him, I remember literally saying in my head, like, well, Obama's president, but you know what? This is still such a great moment for our nation.
I'll tell you what, he handled that the way a great president should, nonpartisan at all, because you got to figure he's a partisan guy. We know that he's liberal as they come. But if he truly cared about politics on that night, if we failed, he would not have been reelected. There's no doubt about it. But he knew that was what to do. And he took advice from both the left and the right and realized this is more important than politics. And that doesn't happen anymore. But he really did. And he was, I mean, he even he beefed us up with more assets. That's why we actually got out, because he told us to have more helicopters. Like he literally said, my guys aren't surrendering to anyone. Like he pulled the good part of Chicago politics out there. Like, okay, we want to fight. We're going to fight. Again, I disagree with most of the stuff he did, but when I dealt with him for this, he handled it like a professional. He handled it like a president. And, but again, people get partisan now. Everything as far as they shot down the guys that killed bin Laden and all that shit. And I'll be honest, some people say, people say you didn't kill bin Laden. I'm like, you know what? I wish I didn't, because I could be retired on a beach in Coronado with a cigar and a mustache. No one would know who I am. But my story is the only one that's approved by the Pentagon, the CIA, SEAL Team 6.
Like, why? What do you mean your story is the only one approved?
Well, people have written books that they've taken them to the bank. They've taken them to taken all their money from. Like, oh, they're lucky they're not in jail. Like,
because they shared too much?
No, they just told stories that aren't true.
Oh, wait a minute. So if you are a Navy SEAL and you publish a book or something, you say some stuff that happened that was not true, you can get in trouble?
I would recommend anyone in the military that writes a book, which is fine, submit it through the process. There's a process at the Pentagon. The Department of Defense has an entire place that does it. They go through it, and every part that's mentioned, they'll submit it to that group. So they go through it just to make sure nothing comes out that that is wrong or puts people in danger.
And you You do have a book about your experience, correct?
Yeah. My book's called The Operator.
Okay, cool.
And that went through the process, and it's the only one that's approved. And there's other books. Like Chris Wallace wrote a book called Countdown Bin Laden. My story's in there. Amal Bin Laden, the wife, wrote an article in a Saudi Arabian or Iranian newspaper. It's my exact story from the opposite end, which is crazy.
Wait, what did she say? I want to know what her perspective was.
I think bin Laden said her husband, because he had three wives. She was the one that was in the bedroom. The last thing he said to her was, they're not here for you. They're here for me.
So he knew.
Yeah, I think so. But I don't care. I don't care. I'm telling whoever wants to hear what happened. I told them because of the people that lost loved ones in the towers on Flight 93, because I had people tell me it's so good to see a face with the mission for healing, not closure. There will never be closure, but healing. So that, I mean, that's it. It's like, you know what? If you don't believe me, that's on you. I'm not going to lose sleep over. I know what happened. I realized no one else saw it. Well, the only person that saw it wrote an article, and she said the exact same thing.
So what are you guys saying to each other once you're getting in the helicopter to get out of there? Once the mission is completed, it's over. Then okay. What do you say?
This is where it gets cool. This is why they should have let me help on one of these movies, because they're better. The jokes are better. I get in there, and the guy I'm sitting next to, if you're not familiar with our rescue of Captain Richard Phillips, he was a captain of a ship that got pulled by Somali pirates off the east coast of Africa. A lot of weird stuff went down before they flew us over. There was a Navy ship, a destroyer pulling this lifeboat. The pirates are in there with Captain Phillips. We flew over from Virginia. I was in my daughter's Easter tea party at her preschool on Good Friday, my birthday, April 10th. So we fly from there, 16 hours later, we're all in there. Anyway, long story short, there was a sniper that shot these guys, and he didn't know how do you deal with that? At the time, that's before Bin Laden. And he didn't know, you know, he's same thing, a bunch of grief from other people. And I kept telling him, hey man, don't sweat it. You're a hero. Don't let anyone bring you down. You are a hero. So fast forward to 2009, we're flying out of the Bin Laden raid. He was on that mission. I'm sitting next to him. He handed me his can of Copenhagen, and he said, take one of mine. Now you know what it's like to be a hero. And we're sitting there, and we know, because we accepted death, but if we can live for 90 minutes and we cross that border back in Afghanistan, we get 50 years. I get to see my kids again. We get to see our families again. So we're flying back. But again, worrying about a missile is not going to stop it. We know now they're scrambling jets and they're going to catch us, but I can't worry about it. So we sat there in whatever kind of, not silence, but more noise, really loud noise, because the helicopter's flying as fast as it can. And so we just started our watches and we're just watching. And we know we got to get to 90 minutes. That's it. So we're just sitting there. I took one of his Copenhagen. It's like, all right, 10 minutes. All right, guys, it's been 20 minutes. And we're just looking at 30 minutes. Now it's been 40. Now it's been 50 minutes. Now it's been 60 minutes. We got to get to 90. And it's like, you start thinking about watching like a baseball game, top of the seventh, a no hitter. I'm not going to say anything. I don't want to jinx it. But 70 minutes, 80 minutes. We got to get to 90. And then if you're not familiar with Miracle on Ice, when Team USA Hockey was beating Russia in the 1980 Olympics, Lake Placid, they're not supposed to win this game, but they're up 4-3, 10 seconds left, and you can hear the countdown, 10, 9, we can still screw this up. They're all nervous, 6, 5, and they win. The pilot came over the radio at 85 minutes in our flight, and he said, very monotone, all right, gentlemen, for the first time in your lives, you're going to be happy to hear this. Welcome to Afghanistan. And then we did it. That's it. Wow. So we land. Both helicopters land. We showed Maya the body. Again, why I should have helped with the movie, because here's how tough she was. We had a moment, the guy and I, that went up the stairs and we're taught what just happened. And he goes, well, there she is. So we walked over to her. And again, watch Zero Dark 30 to get a respect for how awesome she was. But the problem in the movie was when they showed her the body, she cried and left.
That doesn't seem real.
No, not at all. We walked over to her. I pulled my buddy said, you got to give her something, you know. So I took the magazine out of my gun. I handed it to her. And then we said, you know, do you have room for this? And she said, yeah. We said, well, we have something to show you. So we walked her over to the body. And as we're walking over, that's when we start to realize how important this mission is. And it's she did it. And then me being the like arrogant Navy SEAL, I put the pressure on myself. Like, I got to think of something cool to say. And so we walked over and I thought this would have been good enough. We pointed down. I pointed at him and I looked at her and all I said was, is that your guy? She looked down for a second. Keep in mind, she gave up her life. She went down for a second and went, huh, I guess I'm out of a f-ing job.
Because she is done. She did it.
I didn't even like how your life's work, your passion. You did it. F-ing, it's over. I did it. And left and flew home. How cool is she?
That is so cool. And so, yeah. And I have to know what happened to his body after you all killed him, because this is another point of contention and conspiracy is what the heck did they do with it? Was he really dead? Did anyone ever verify?
Yep. So we took him from Jalalabad up to Bagram Airfield. And that is another podcast I could talk about what happened there. We put him down. All the stuff that we gathered, we put in different tables. We have him lined up for which building, which floor. He's laying here. The three-letter agency, the smart guys, the scientists, the cops are there and they're taking the picture. We already have pictures of them, but they're taking the picture of them, doing real DNA tests. They're on the phone with the president. They brought us breakfast. And again, this is the whole how life happens around you as you're planning. I'm still wearing my gear. They got us these breakfast sandwiches. I was putting hot sauce on it. Bin Laden's body's right here. We have a TV on. The president walks down the white carpet or the red carpet, and we can hear him say, "Tonight I can report to the American people and to the world, the United States conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of Al-Qaeda." I hear the president say Osama bin Laden. I look at Osama bin Laden, and I remember saying to myself, how in the world did I get here from Butte, Montana? So then, and that's weird. That's, again, that my plan was I got dumped. Now I'm a Navy SEAL in bin Laden's bedroom. Now we're back.
And now you're having an Egg McMuffin next to his dead body.
Seriously. And so then we handed him off to our friends from the Army, and they flew him. I think it was to the USS Vincennes. Might have been something else. And then they threw him overboard. And that's what happened.
So he just rotted in the ocean.
I guess so. And I disagreed with doing that. And again, I hope they release the pictures. If they do, by the way, those are my gloves, which I still have, holding his head together. I'm convinced at some point someone will need to be reelected and they'll release the pictures. It was my decision, something like that. But they put him at sea, and I disagreed with that, because if you understand their version of Sunni Islam, they didn't want there to be a shrine. They don't make shrines to people. They worship one God. That's it. That's why a lot of Muslims get mad when you draw a picture of Muhammad, because they don't want you worshiping false idols. That's why they get so angry. There is a law. That's it. They would never worship him, but they threw him at sea. That's that. I just,
why did
that.
You disagreed with that? What did you think should have happened to his body?
I don't give a shit if he gets a proper burial. I really don't care. I mean, I had some morbid stuff we could have done to him, because I just, what he did it to 9/11, but there should have been proof that there is proof. And there are pictures of him in a file cabinet at the CIA, like in a file cabinet, not even in a frame, just sitting there.
Whoa.
Yeah. Crazy. I mean, there are people in the government right now that have seen the pictures that I know personally. A lot of congressmen have seen him, people on the Intel committee, stuff like that.
Okay. So speaking of Intel, I want to know your intelligence on Osama bin Laden's actual involvement in 9/11 and just the development of the Afghanistan war in general. I mean, was Osama bin Laden actually the main culprit, or was he just the symbol for the media to focus on?
Well, he was the leader of Al-Qaeda, and they came up with the ideas. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was another one of the guys, KSM, who's in, as far as we know, he's in Guantanamo Bay. They'll probably just release him like they do to everybody else, because, you know, the real bad guy's us. But he was, he was funding it. He was leading it. It was up to him. And he knew the entire plan. He was behind the 93 attack when they said they're going to put a bomb in the basement, which they did. It was going to knock one tower into the other, which it didn't. And they came back like they always do. They haven't forgotten about us. They're going to come back. So he was the head of Al-Qaeda. It was his mission. Some other people planned it. Some guys carried it out. And, they haven't forgotten about us. That's the sad part.
And so do you think that the government is hiding information from the American public about 9/11? I have to ask you that.
You know what? I hope not. I think we were taken by surprise. I think there's bad stuff that happened because of it. Like invading Iraq. I was there. I fought in Iraq a lot. But like looking back on it, like, what was that all about? You know, phony intelligence because of personal vendetta. No, we needed to go into, we didn't do it right. We did it right at first. You got to hit Al-Qaeda out of Afghanistan. But even the Taliban told us if they thought we were serious, they would have just given us Al-Qaeda. They all went into Pakistan. We knew it. We just weren't taking them. We start to play too nice. We get too many lawyers and politicians involved, like we do in everything, and they screw it up.
Is there a safety threat that you have to deal with now in your everyday life because you killed the number one terrorist in the world?
Yeah, every day. I've had to take precautions. I can't get into a lot of the security thing. I know how to deal with these people, and I know how to do security, personal security. I'll have guns or guys with guns with me places I go, and I move people around, and cameras and dogs and things like that. But I'm aware of it. I'd rather be aware of a threat than put my head in the sand and pretend there's not one. You got to figure Al-Qaeda wouldn't. I mean, they'd kill me, but they're not going to wait for me to come out of Fox News or something when they can go 3 blocks away and kill as many people in Times Square as they can. And, everyone's a threat. Like, you're a female on TV. They'd kill you too. Like,
oh, wow.
I had an interview with a woman in Dubai, and I told her, like, you're easier to kill than I am. And they hate you just as much because it's because we go against their version of their religion.
Right.
So it doesn't matter which side of the aisle you're on, what color your skin is, or your sexual orientation. They want to kill you because you don't believe what they do.
Is there actually a bounty on your head from them?
I don't know. I think there has been, but I've been fortunate that people that have said it have been killed in drone strikes.
Right. Okay, so truly, how bad was President Biden's Afghanistan debacle?
Horrible. It was the worst thing. If you if you sat with some of the best military minds, like we did for the Bin Laden raid, you sat that group down and said, what's the worst thing we can do? We would have come up with that plan. I'm serious. That plan was so bad. And like General Milley, who's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, if he told the president to do that, and he did, he should be fired. If he told the president not to do that, and the president did it anyway, he should just resign. Because that is the worst mode. 13 people died in the blink of an eye for no reason. Not only was it preventable, it was predictable. And we could have, I said it before it was going to happen. And it's just, it's just sad. It was done for political reasons. We lose everything because of people in suits in the Beltway. And that includes the generals, the horrible people that haven't won a war since World War II. And the only reason we won World War II is because we had a politician with the stones to drop nukes. And that's it. The way you beat force is with force at the point of origin. That's it. And it's such. As someone who's been to war, killed a bunch of people. I wish there was no war. I don't wish war on anyone. You shouldn't see it because it's fast, it's loud, it's permanent. It's not unnecessary. Like one of my favorite jokes is, you know, we should have women in charge, seriously, because we wouldn't have war, but we would have countries that don't talk to each other for a few months.
Very true.
Never lose your sense of humor is one of my points too.
So, okay, I just don't understand what's going on with the culture in our military, because when I talk to you, Robert, I mean, I get a true sense of patriotism from you, a love of country, and what the hell is going on now with our military members?
It's the leadership, it's the senior leadership, because at some points it becomes political, and if you don't say the right thing to the woke culture, you won't get promoted. It's all about personal power and how much money can I make when I get out working for a contract. It's like when the military industrial compound complex exists because, like, why do we leave all those helicopters, tanks, guns, and vehicles in Afghanistan? Oh, because when they get out, now look, I have a job. I guess we better get a big $100 million contract. Look who gets part of that. More stuff. Like, that's what they're doing. The people that are in charge shouldn't be in charge. It should be men and women who have been on the ground making the decisions that's right for the greater good of the country. When we were in the military, we were equal opportunity. It doesn't matter your sexual orientation, your race, where you're from, what you look like. If you live up to the standards, welcome aboard. That's it. That's how simple it was. But now, because of the woke culture, because you need to say the right thing, it's become an experimentation ground for anything, everything from, even when we invaded Iraq, it wasn't coronavirus, it was anthrax. And we all got anthrax because someone in the government owned part of the company.
Right.
It's someone's getting kicked back from somewhere else. And because personal power has gotten away from, and the problem is, it takes an attack to bring us all together. I don't want another 9/11, but I'd love another 9/12.
Right. So where, okay. How bad is how at risk is our national security right now with all of this woke culture stuff infiltrating the military?
Well, people are going to leave. The good people are going to leave.
But isn't that part of the plan, is to make sure that you only have people in the police and the military to carry out your agenda?
I wish I knew what the plan was. I don't know. I mean, I've seen enough to know that there's bad stuff going on the other end. And it's, you know, the problem with the country and in Washington is not the person who's in the White House for 4 or 8 years. It's the person who's in the Capitol for 50 years. There's your problem.
Absolutely.
And that's what's happening now. I wish I had an answer. I've been tempted to maybe run, but I don't want to be a part of that. Washington, D.C. physically makes me ill. I'll look at the Capitol. I go there quite a bit, by the way. And I'll look at the Capitol. My first thought is, this is why we can't have nice things.
Well, I think, Robert, you just personal experience here today, you are so entertaining to listen to. You should do a podcast.
That's in the air. That's in the works, maybe. Because it's nice to have a platform. Because, like I said, I've been on Fox, CNN. I'm on different channels. And I get 3 minutes and then I say something or Twitter and all of a sudden I'm canceled. It's like,
You're a trip on Twitter. I love following you on Twitter. So one last thing I want to ask you. What message would you like to leave with young people who don't see the value in the freedom that they have here in America?
Travel. True poverty is not getting a free check, but you have an iPhone and Escalade. True poverty is, I can't have clothes and my kids play in a literal cesspool. And I'm not saying go to those places, but educate yourself and not buy stuff that's required reading. Go see other people. And also, not even that, but as opposed to Instagram, you know, I didn't know everyone I knew had a private jet until I got on Instagram. Wow. you know, and other than cable news and social media, most people are actually really good. I get to fly all the time. I talk to thousands of people face to face a week. Most people are good. I have friends, believe it or not, who are liberals. We get along great. It's funny. Like we don't argue and hate each other. We're like, well, that's an interesting point.
Liberals do believe in free speech and hearing other opinions. It's the left that doesn't.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Most people are more liberal than they realize. Figure this. Al-Qaeda is very, very conservative. That's bad. Leftists are very, very left. That's bad. Most of us are right in here. Most of us are literally like, look, I disagree with that. But if you're not hurting anyone, fine. But when you start to hurt other people or impose your will on other people, that's the problem. But I mean, so travel, get outside and realize seriously, most people are good. The point that I make is real America is not the paid mobs tearing down statues. Real America is the people that start a convoy in San Diego, drive through California, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, pick up more people because they're on their way to help hurricane victims in Florida. That's real America. And we're all like that. That's real people. That's what we're like. And people are good. Don't believe all this nonsense.
Unless
you're on Twitter, 100% true.
Yeah. So speaking of Twitter, what is your Twitter and then the name of your book once again?
Okay. So the Twitter is @MichOoyah, MichOoyah. I need to tell you how I got that name. Before I left the Navy, my buddies were saying, hey, there's this new thing called Twitter. You got to get on it. Make up a fake name. You can mess with people. They'll never know who you are.
A burner account.
Right. So I came up with Hooyah because SEALs say Hooyah and I'm Irish. So MichOoyah. And and I got out and my name leaked as Killing Bin Laden. I woke up with like 15,000 followers. I'm like, I'm MichOoyah. So @MichOoyah on all my social media is MichOoyah. And then the book is called The Operator by Robert O'Neill. And I have a new thing I'm doing because of the process to get it approved. It was a bestseller, but it didn't really get out there. So what I do on my website is, so that's robertjoneill.com. You can buy a signed book, and I just signed a ton of them today. But my catch is I will seriously sign anything you say. Think of something clever, and I'll sign it in there just for a joke. I had a dude the other day that said it was a birthday gift for his buddy. I had a sign, Ken, you kill it selling mattresses like I killed Bin Laden. Like, just ridiculous. So it's fun, a lot of fun.
That's such a great Christmas gift idea, actually, for people to keep in mind. Robert, thank you so much for your service. Happy Veterans Day, and thank you for coming on The Spillover.
Oh, awesome. Thanks for having me, Alex. Appreciate it.
So that was badass, an actual American hero, ladies and gents. We love to see it. So grateful to him. Make sure that you thank a veteran in your life this weekend. Share this episode with them and any military wives you know. If you're a military wife, thank you also. You sacrifice a lot, and military wives do not get enough credit. I will be the first to say you are way more of a stronger woman than I could ever dream to be. You are absolutely incredible. Post this episode to your stories. And if you love The Spillover, subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts and Spotify so that the new episodes automatically download to your phone and you don't have to go searching. It's way more convenient. Next week is going to be a very spicy episode. See, The Spillover is named The Spillover because this is all the conservatee that can't fit into a politics episode, which is my daily show. Probably next week is going to be extremely controversial, even amongst Christians. And I live for drama, so I am stoked for this. I'm going to make some people feel uncomfy. It's also going to open some people's minds that may have no idea that what they're doing on a daily basis is actually dabbling in the dark arts. Ooh, I've said too much already. That's coming out 1 week from now on Thursday at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern. Let my bosses know that you love The Spillover by leaving a 5-star review. That is the best way to support us. You can also watch my daily show, Poplitics, on Instagram, where I cover pop culture without the leftist propaganda every day for 10 minutes. You can watch this episode of The Spillover, by the way, on the Poplitics YouTube channel. Subscribe to that. Love you, mean it. Bye.